I am unashamed. What about you?
I think a lot of our listeners, they don't realize what happens in the 30 seconds before we start. We were just fixed to start talking about that. Phil said, hey, hang on. I clean those ducks. I got to protect them from the neighbor's dogs.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a place where you don't want to clean something you're going to eat and just leave it.
You don't want to drop guts anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure people struggle with that all over America. You know,
for some reason, I just saw that on a bumper sticker, and I thought,
we don't want to drop guts everywhere.
Where's that? Where there's a dead carcass, the vultures will gather.
It's like Phil today, when we were coming back from duck hunting, he said, what are you doing? Because we pulled up beside each other. I said, I'm looking for my chainsaw, because before daylight,
yeah,
I had cut some brush, but I had so much stuff in my wheeler that by the time I got the brush in there, I had to lose something. I just couldn't get it, and I was by myself. They were all took off, you know, hurry up and go.
My exact words were a brand new chainsaw. I said, it was a bold move.
Yeah, Phil said,
but I said, what am I talking about? We're behind the locked gate. I said, you know, the odds are
with you. That's what I thought, but I thought I had it somewhat hid because I couldn't find it.
It wouldn't have been noticeable unless somebody was just looking in the weeds.
I thought I did good in the dark to hide something on a road that if you were driving by, you wouldn't notice.
Because a redneck's got a nose for a chainsaw. Oh, it's like a chain. We talked about that.
It's in the top five of most stolen things.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I walked by Missy and Mia last night. They were watching a movie, and there was some yuppie guy talking, obvious. I mean, they're watching a movie.
Yeah.
But he was saying, yeah, I'll bring my chainsaw. He was trying to get a date with this woman. I wasn't watching it. I just heard it. And he said, I can bring my chainsaw and cut some of the branches, you know, out in the outer edge of your yard. The way he said it, I said, hey, he's never turned on a chainsaw in his life.
And whoever wrote that never had either.
And Missy said, what? She pushed pause. I said, that dude is not a good actor. He doesn't do chainsaws. Oh, I got
it. It offended you, didn't it?
Yeah, I was offended.
It was probably a Hallmark movie.
You can't find a redneck and give him a token chainsaw role on a movie? No, we can't do that.
No, there's no rednecks on Hallmark days or whatever they were watching.
No,
I can promise you that.
I forgot what we were talking about, but I just thought it was funny that Phil took off running to save the ducks that he cleaned, which would be bad. You go out there and there's, you know, couple of leg bones.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of dogs. Oh, and are they pit bulls? Is that what they are? This
one of them is.
I think there's two.
They
or three
tend to be friendly enough, but if you put some freshly picked ducks, it's
especially ones we're supposed to eat. You know.
Yeah, I don't trust the dogs walk around.
I don't
that.
Do dogs that come up and growl and attack. I just go right at them.
Yeah.
I just say, let's end this now. And that usually, you know, it's like my neighbor's dog, Willie's, I guess, adopted daughter.
Yeah.
They have a bulldog that bites everybody. And when I came, every time I go by, because I go fishing in Willie's pond, and Willie's got a golf course, so I'm playing, that he came out, he said, I don't understand why this dog loves you so much. Of course, I didn't want to tell him why. Because people, oh, no, you were mean to that dog. That dog was fixed to bite me.
So you and the dog, there was never a failure to communicate.
No, he come running at me with teeth out, and I went running at him with teeth out, and we met. And we have been best friends ever since. That dog follows me along, and now he protects me.
Yeah.
So now he bites people that try to get at you.
We just hit. Yeah. I hit him. He was running toward me, and I was running him.
It's called communication.
He weighs 10 pounds. I weigh 170. I won.
And now there's a love and respect there, because, you know.
Love and respect. But, I mean, you can't be like my son, Cole. I chewed him out and sat him down. He just graduated college. He come in there. He was bandaging up his ankle. I said, what happened? He said, the dog bit me. I said, what did you do when the dog came at you? He said, I ran.
Yep.
I said, Evidently not fast enough.
No, because if you get in a race with a dog, you're probably going to lose.
You're going to lose the dog bit.
So what you're trying to say, Jace, is the dog was having a field day until he ran up on you.
Well, we moved to Austin, you know, and these two dogs, next door neighbors, they tried that. But these yuppie dogs, they're not like down here. As soon as they come barking at me, I started barking, running at them. I just took a look. They looked at me and ran back into that house and went through that little doggy door. They went through that doggy door. I've never seen them again. I said,
you just scared them.
I said, boy, these yuppie dogs, they easy.
Well, yeah. They looked at you and thought some homeless guy's chasing us in the neighborhood.
Of course, that's came in and Missy said, was that you barking outside? I said, yeah. They're stupid. They're stupid dogs were barking at
them. I wish somebody would got that on camera.
And she said, "Do you realize now that every neighbor thinks that we're crazy?"
Jace, I hope you don't ever run into a trained police dog.
Yeah, that's right. That may not work.
I'm just saying, a man has to know his limitations.
I'm not going
to
take any lip off a dog. I don't think there's a dog in this world that can whip me.
Ooh, Jace, that's a statement.
But I just know one thing. Dogs know. When you come at them with confidence, most of the time you don't have to do anything. They say, don't fool with him.
They do sense the fear.
Yeah. I don't have any fear.
I remember we were living in that trailer park up in Farmville years ago before we moved down here, and there was a deputy sheriff that lived about four or five trailers down, and he had one of them German shepherds, and he had him hooked to a clothesline in front by the side of his trailer. We were up there playing. Jace, you may have been there. I mean, we were little. But he came up there, and he said, now I'm fixing to leave. You see that dog down there hooked to that thing? Do not mess with that dog. Don't go anywhere near it. Y'all understand me? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He leaves. Well, of course, when there's a bunch of kids, boys especially, and you say don't do something, then we sat there for a while looking down there, and everybody wanted to go down there and see what the deal was with that dog. I mean, it's human nature, I guess.
Bad thinking.
So I was the leader of the outfit, so I went in there. So I went up to him, and he's just sitting there, you know, looking calm. He didn't bark. He didn't move. He just sat there. And so I got a little closer, but I was ready to run, you know, at any time. And when I reached my hand out to touch him on the head, he came to life. I mean, teeth.
Al, you went about that completely wrong.
So, look, I took off running. Problem was I should have ran straight away, but I was running down the clothesline. Well, he was just about to grab me, and I heard him go, "Wheep!" When he got to the end of that clothesline, you know.
Oh, yeah. You better be glad it was there.
I kept running. I ran for a half a mile.
But
that's
my point. If you're the aggressor,
I know
they'll back down.
Well, I'm just saying it was this dog.
Just so you know, I thought I you know, what little raising you would get at the time, but I thought I raised you smarter than that.
Well, like Jay said, at that era, Dad, you weren't exactly around a lot, so that's what you had to learn a few lessons yourself. I tell you what, I never approached another police dog or anything else.
That's right.
Well, I've had a few missteps in my idea. I mean, one night. I let my dog out. Missy was in Austin, so I was by myself. I let my dog out. Well, he took off, and I heard screaming and barking. Well, I thought it was another dog. So I took off running, but I'm running alongside the pool, but it's at night. And so, you know, if you see me in the pool, I fell in, which is what happened.
Well,
Missy had these, what do you call them, like pool lounge chairs. Yeah, they sit low.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see that thing. And I'm running wide open because I'm like, you're not going to come in my yard. And there's a dog, wild dog in my yard is what I thought. Man, I hit that thing, caught me in the knees. And I just did a flip, bounced on the around the pool, and then just went in the pool. So then my dog jumped in the pool with me. I guess he thought, oh, it's pool time. So I get out, look, and it was a possum. So, you know, I did all that for nothing. I went in there, and I'm bleeding, you know. And
was the water cold? Was this
it was cold. What do you think? So I called Missy. I said, well, I just fell in the pool. I was chasing a possum. The way that sound, I didn't mean to say it like that, yeah. But I meant, I thought it was a dog. I thought they were going to get in a fight. I was trying to protect the dogs. And
see, you know, the Jace's story is that, so most people, like, you look out, you hear something, you know, most people, me and you, you're looking out the window, kind of gauging what's going on. Jace just runs straight into whatever. I mean, just, yeah. He talks about with the dogs, everything. He's just a get right in there and find out what's going on. That's an aggressive way to live life.
Well, I run with the dogs every evening about dark. Yeah, I told you that.
You told us that before.
So I like it because all the sophisticated yuppie neighbors that we have, which are some that we have, you know, Willie's in-laws, and I like it when they see me doing that because it just, they just say, just leave him alone. He's too funny.
I came running by Johnny the other night.
What Johnny did?
He's like, good garden, Steve. What are you running after? I said, oh, we're just running.
So I had your next door neighbor's boys over to my house yesterday. So I called them up and said, hey, y'all ready to earn a little money? Because I got a little job. And normally when I have a job like that, I say I want strong backs and weak minds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just, I need some girl. I need somebody to get up and down the steps. Grunts. But them two are such little geniuses, and they're super nice. These boys are the nicest young men I've ever met in life. Aren't they? I mean, they just are mannered. Yeah, the Bowles boys.
Hey, those boys are teenagers. I probably have 10% of the intellect that those boys did.
So when they walked up, I said, well, boys, normally I say I need a couple of strong backs and weak minds, but with you two, I can't say that because your minds aren't weak. And they both laughed and they said, well, we'll do the strong back today. You know, they're just like super nice by what they did. Well, then they get up there. So I had them unloading all my Christmas stuff out of the attic. And what normally takes me and Lisa half a day, and I'm stove up for 2 days from doing it, they did it in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so I gave them two things. I gave them a bottle of water, which they were more excited about the bottle of water. And then I gave them a $20 bill, mm-hmm. which is pretty good for 30 minutes work. But the reason I did that is because from now on, that's who I call for that job, both the put up and the takedown.
Both parents are lawyers.
They're both attorneys, yeah.
Well, I gave them.
There you go.
And look, they're from the ones from California, which you mentioned him the other day.
Yeah.
And I told him yesterday, I said, Debo, I said, you glad you ain't in California anymore? He said, oh, brother. I get down on my knees and thank the Lord every day for being able to live in Louisiana and get out of that hellhole.
Yeah. They're the ones I gave them when they moved in next to me. I caught them a bunch of white perch, and I cleaned them. I said, now here we, to show you that we love our neighbors, right. I'm giving you the best thing that I got. I said, I possess a certain set of skills where I can go catch crappie. And clean them, prepare them for you, and I'm going to give you a meal. And he's like, well, we've never eaten. What'd you call it, a crappie? I said, oh, this is. So then I gave him the recipe. And when the next day I saw him, he said, that was the greatest gift of my life. It's so funny because I thought he was going to say.
Well, it ain't saying much for California, that's for sure.
No, I was like, boy, you give him some fresh, you know, clean crop.
That little one, he's just like the other two. He told me he was 7 yesterday. And I said, Ben, I said, man, you're growing up. And I said, but you're the only one that's a Louisiana boy. He said, Mr. Robertson, actually, I am a Californian because I was born in San Diego. And I know I was only there 3 months, but I still consider myself a Californian. Yeah. This is like, who's 7-year-old kid talks.
You know, that's when they had that show, you know, are you smarter than a 5th grader?
Yeah.
I told Missy, I said, I'm not, because at the time that I saw this, that kid was 5.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not as smart as a kindergartner because he lives next door.
Well, just right prior to World War II ending, I was conceived in California.
Oh, that's right.
And
really?
My mama carried me around on California soil for most of the gestation period before the war was over, and I was born in 46.
Did you ever feel the homing beacon of wanting to go back to the home, motherland?
No, but it marked me because I was on California soil, and that's why I had I've had some troubles in my life.
It took you 30 years to get over that.
You'll never get over this California crap.
I'll say this, though.
Hey, wait, let's take a break. So we enjoy our Black Rifle coffee that we drink on set here. It's really good. And another thing we really love about this company is we've talked about it before. These guys are veterans that started it. And they donate. They've donated over 45,000 pounds of coffee. That's over a million cups of coffee to soldiers who are overseas or to law enforcement officers or also firefighters. So basically, in you buy a pound of coffee and they're going to donate that equal amount to either a first responder, a veteran, you know, military.
Great thing to do.
It's an awesome thing to do. So just to let you know, if you anything you buy in the month of November, it's almost over. We still got a little more time. It can be delivered by Christmas morning. So buy a bag, give a bag. This is a great thing to do to support our veterans. So here's what you do. You go to Black Rifle Coffee, all together, blackriflecoffee.com/Phil. You not only do you check out the freshest coffee, but also you're going to get an opportunity to help other people. So blackriflecoffee.com/Phil, you get 20% off your coffee, apparel, gear, as well as your first month of the coffee club, which we're all members of, because then you get it every month. So blackriflecoffee.com/Phil.
I've said this before. There are some really good North California people.
We duck hunted out there.
We ran with them, and I was like, I didn't know there were rednecks in California.
Because, you know, yeah. We sold a lot of calls out back in the day.
A lot of calls.
You would go out to Chico. Remember Chico?
That's some of the best duck hunting we ever ran up on.
Awesome.
Pintails everywhere. I mean,
We went to that town, and they had like a hayride, and you stood on the back of a trailer and spoke, and the whole town came
Modesto.
Out. Is that where we were?
Modesto, California. Yep, they had big hay bales up in the city square. Yep. And I got up on the hay bales and preached the gospel to them, and we went duck hunting, you know. I thought when was that time frame?
That would have been
the 80s.
Yeah, but can 80s. You imagine some of those people coming from the cities just driving by, seeing that, thinking, what in the world?
They were strong conservative minds. Yeah.
You and I went about 5 years ago. We spoke in Bakersfield, California. It was some of the finest people we've ever met.
That's right.
They were amazing.
Yep.
And so I feel bad for them because I feel like they're just trapped in this like terrible.
Well, it makes me mad when people start attacking, which we've documented that well. When they're attacking people singing to God and using the coronavirus as a way to stop that.
I mean,
they're like, can't even do it with a mask on.
It's pathetic.
And you can't even do it loudly. I mean, that makes me just want to fight.
And I feel, you know, people say, well, why do the people stay? Of course, a lot of them are leaving. But you always say, well, it's because they're home. I mean, they've lived there in Northern California and hunted ducks for generations.
Well,
they don't want to have to leave.
For the most part, there's nobody bothering them. You know, California's a big place.
Yeah. Except that, Jace, the taxes are out of control. Now you got the rolling brownouts. They don't even have power. You know, because of all these crazy, you know, policies.
Yeah, they could say that about us. They're like, well, look at New Orleans, you know, during Mardi Gras. I mean, that might as well be a million miles away.
Which is funny that you're right, because when you say Louisiana, most people's only connection is to New Orleans. You guys are near New Orleans. I said, no, we're 5 hours from there. We don't go there.
Well, I stay away from places that smell like vomit 24 hours a day.
Is that just a general rule?
Yeah.
It does.
There's a lot of people getting drunk when you get out of the bus or the car and you're like, what's that smell? That's vomit.
Well, we have a new brother from that area. He said close to New Orleans, right up from New Orleans.
Yesterday. You baptized him?
Yesterday. I had Sis Trunk baptized him.
Now look, it's great food. And I have some friends in New Orleans, but a lot of that food is spilled on the sidewalks a few hours later and after quite a few adult beverages.
Yep. Well, one of our longtime listeners, Ian, we baptized him last year, I think. He and I still communicate some, and he told me, he was like, you know, I've always loved New Orleans. I mean, he's been there for generations, and there's so much about the city, the history of it, his parents. But he said, you know, for the first time, you know, since he came to Christ and kind of had a new vision of living, he was like, I just don't know that I want to stay here. You know, and he's still got his kids, his daughters are there. But so I know Ian's listening, but you know, it struck me. I thought, you know, it's a lot of people that have relocated here. You know, you had a family in from New Jersey the other night.
In fact, we baptized them all. And yesterday, JoJo, we baptized their parents and one of their children. But yesterday, The guy from New Orleans was there and another guy from Texas. So they said they wanted us to baptize him. And after I preached the gospel to him, I just turned to that boy that had not been baptized over there. And I said, you want to join these guys? We fed them supper the other night, you know, and did a little preaching to them. But I said, you want to join these guys? He said, yeah, I do. I said, come on.
All you need to do is ask.
That's right.
I just ask. So you want to join these two guys up here or what there, JoJo? He said, yeah, I believe it will. Come on. I said, come on, boy.
Which is all what I've always loved about Dad is that he doesn't mind just asking it. I mean, if somebody just says, no, I don't think I'm ready.
But I've shared stories.
They just moved to Louisiana, and they're from New Jersey, and he was telling me the places to, you know. I said, can you hunt anything up in there? He said, not really. He said, there's some kind of woods on the edge of it that there's actually trees.
He told me that struck me was when I met him, he said, you know, Al, he said, I've lived up there most of my life. He said, so for the last 25 or 30 years, I've been surrounded by the angriest, meanest people on the planet. Everybody is mad at somebody. You do one thing, they're on your case. Your neighbors are, it's anti what we would see here. And he said, you know, we moved down here, and then a hurricane hit within 2 weeks, and a tree fell across my house. He said, I had neighbors, people coming up I never met, chainsaws or cutting stuff off. The next day, the church showed up with a bunch of volunteers. He was like, we were in culture shock.
Yeah, now that is something good about the South. And you know, what they call a Bible Belt. Because like my neighbors, the California neighbors, I bet I three Saturdays in a row, all day running that chainsaw. You know, what's funny is his wife bought me, what do you call those? Like chaps or whatever for chains. She was worried, which I'm not saying you shouldn't be safe, but I was like, you didn't have to buy. They felt bad. They were like, oh, you're doing all this sawing. We don't want you to be injured over here while you're doing it.
Right.
I'm like, no, this is pretty basic. We got it. But even when I gave him the crappie, which I did it again, I got him some more when I had a bunch. And his wife said, this is just so organic. And I was thinking, in her mind, you just went down there and you got it and you cleaned them and you just ate them. It's just organic.
Which is funny because them being from California, right, is still in them, the organic lifestyle, but it really isn't organic. We grew up, we were organic before it was a thing.
They ought to
call
us.
Yeah, I'd use that now.
A group of Mr. Organics is all we are.
That's right. We started.
We have duck and dressing coming up Wednesday, this case. Thanksgiving. Let's get together.
Well, are you going to use those teal we shot today?
Yep.
Actually, I think this episode will air the day after Thanksgiving. So, but at the same time, I know that, Dad, you're going to be looking forward to Black Friday. That's one of your big days of the year, right?
What is Black Friday? Oh, that's when the women stampede?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I heard about it, but no.
I thought you were going to go up there with Miss Kay, and instead of hunting that day, you'd be outside of Walmart at
this
4 a.m.
I'm going to make a pact, because every year.
I don't wait in line in town for anything.
Well, every year when it comes duck season, because the duck season days run together. Every day after a while seems like you don't know what day it is. But when I go up on Friday, I'm like, what is going on? Because you can't, it takes you twice as long just to get to the house. So this year I'm going to be prepared.
Well, I wonder if the COVID will change that, or do you think people go crazy? I
mean, Al brought us the chicken and biscuits fresh from town. They were still warm today. And I said,
That was a lifesaver for y'all, wasn't it, coming out of
that? I mean, after saying, well, these are good. I mean, I wouldn't be so bold to drive up there. And get in the line and go buy them. Like, no.
But you don't mind if I would do that to bring it to
I say you did a good deed there, and you keep it up.
Well, when you get up it.
Dad said, you can do this anytime you want to. I said, Dad, I usually bring chicken.
When you get up
I go to town once a week, so that gives me four.
And it's only on Sundays. That's why Dad never knew about Chick-fil-A, because they're closed on Sunday.
There you go.
I like those taglines when people say, that feeling when you go to Chick-fil-A only to realize it's Sunday.
That's right.
Mad face. Mad.
Yeah. Let's take a break. So, Dad, I don't know if you knew this or not, but on Blaze TV, Blaze Media, their merchandising shop, this cup with your picture on it is their best-selling item.
That's disturbing.
So not Mark Levin, not Glenn Beck. It's old PR with his little bandana and sunglasses on. Now, this one's one of the newer ones. It also has on the other side, because we did this with the book, I Ride with King Jesus.
Disturbing to exciting.
So anyway, you want to check out some of their gear. Unashamed Merch, MERCH, that's one word, unashamedmerch.com. You can find all the stuff they got there. Also, we talk about it from time to time, if you'd like to be able to subscribe to Dad's show, In the Woods with Phil, you go to blazetv.com/unashamed. You get 30 days free, and you get $10 off, which is really good. So now's a good time to do that. It's a great Christmas idea. To give some, my dad has about, I think we're almost up to 800 episodes or something like that. That we've done. Can you believe that? It's somewhere between 600 and 800. But they're little video blogs and a lot of stuff. You know that you don't get on the podcast. So check them out for some merch, or also subscribe to Blaze TV. But you're right. And you know what's interesting, Dad? I thought about it. This is just as a point. You saw this still ongoing about the election, still hadn't got stuff decided, back and forth. And you go, if you ever would go drive by a Chick-fil-A, especially our one here in town, you talk about running some volume through a place.
Oh.
If Chick-fil-A were to take over counting votes in America, they said, the president's going to give you a commission. Chick-fil-A, you figure out how to do this thing. We would have everything, you'd know everything by 10 o'clock that night.
It can be done, Al, but the reason it's not done is the electorate. We've gotten so corrupt.
Yeah.
We can't even count votes anymore.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, honestly, count.
But, you know, because if you talk about efficient, is that not the most efficient? I mean, Jason and I live in town, so we know. I can't even go to another fast food place anyway, because then you're sitting there in line half the day. Chick-fil-A, I would say today, when I stopped by and got those biscuits for y'all, I was in the process of about 50 cars, and we did it in 7.5 minutes. 50 cars went through the drive-thru in less than 8 minutes today. Now, you got to have a system.
That's a well-oiled machine.
Oh, they're out there in the parking lot. They're taking your order in your car, and then you come by, the food's ready.
Well, here's the problem. We can blame whoever we want to, but we can't count ducks. So, I mean, I asked today, it's constantly changing.
I mean, you're saying, is there somebody in here that can count? I mean,
I don't know.
You need to put Phyllis in charge of that.
One time
we
were
smart.
At 20 and we shot some, and then we were down to 17. And I thought they were joking, but I was like, no. So I was like, well,
what
you were wrong earlier. Well,
they were saying we killed 4 on that round, but
but then you didn't pick up.
Well, looking that's in what the happens. Because people, of course.
Because you got human dogs today, right? You didn't have your dogs.
Phyllis is, that's why I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And we basically, and Phil treats us the same. Oh, no, I sat on the left, back, further back. He didn't fall right there. You're going to get.
They're actually better than dogs, but they'll wear out quicker.
That's right, because the dog never complains,
well, Jay
right?
Jay usually running around, but he wasn't today. So
he's not quite been himself.
So I kept.
A human, you can say, go left. He's left. He fell to the left. And they go left.
But a dog, so, you got to give him the full hand.
Blow your whistle. He got to turn around and look.
Well, that's the problem is a human, though, will argue with you. That's right. He'll stop the dog.
Well, and complain about it. That's right. The dog never
does.
We're
back on the dogs again.
But at least you don't whine as much.
I don't know. I was tired. That's why we were so hungry, because when you get up before 4 o'clock, your whole body changed. By 10 o'clock, you'll run through a wall for a chicken biscuit.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, just the hunger. I don't understand what is going on. But
yeah,
I
came in today with that bag of biscuits, I have to say, you boys perked up.
You handed me a biscuit, and I was like, are there any more?
Well, I had two more I was going to give to Godwin and Jay, but they never showed up. So
perfect.
There you go. Y'all got to eat there. So I guess we'll get back to John 18. And finish up that discussion we started last time.
Which, by the way, we're going to do Thanksgiving Where are we doing that here? Are we doing that with Phil?
I think we're doing it
with Willie's. Phil does the duck and dressing, and then we'll do the do we do the seafood?
No, it's Christmas.
Well, we do, though.
I think
so.
This
my, because you know what happens?
John Gimber's fried turkey is my dressing. Can't duck and dressing. Ducks.
But then
I got a smoked ham.
But we
Arkansas.
Usually do it the night before Thanksgiving.
That's right. Wednesday is our
So day. On Thanksgiving, I have Missy's family come in. And
oh, that's when you do
you,
that.
You talk. Well, what happened was, because they're from Yuppieville, too. I hope they're not listening. But and so somewhere in there, I've noticed that through the years, now they're leaning toward, do you have any deer? Because, you know, they'll come by, and I'm right. cooking a little deer.
Right.
They eat that, and they're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever eaten. So we've gravitated towards seafood, deer, things like that, which has been
kind of like we do for our Christmas because we don't want to repeat the whole turkey ham.
Well, right.
Right, and all that.
I mean, I'll eat turkey once, and then the next day, let's move on. But I'll eat a deer. I eat a deer every day.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So I'm kind of excited.
Well, the Robertson spread is always, I mean, it's traditional, but it's extensive. You know, just because we do Gimber fries three turkeys or maybe four, because I mean our family's getting huge. That's why we've been meeting at Willie's. It's so big because
I like the mustard based fried turkeys. Yeah, I mean, there's something
the bark on them is what's makes it. I mean,
which it's mustard and mustard,
just peanut oil, mustard and peanut oil. I think that's it.
You don't put flour, does it?
Mm-mm. If they get that,
but it doesn't taste like mustard.
No, it doesn't. Well, it's just like a crappie. You don't taste it on them either. It's just that bark that's on there. And of course, Dad's duck and dressing. I mean, Dad, you got that. Like, I think yours is even better than Granny's, which was the original, but you got that down.
I watched her make it, and she asked me, she said, how come you're always standing here when I'm making this? I said, I'm not going to forget how you're making it because I like it.
Exactly.
I said, I'm going to make that, Mom, just like you make it.
Yeah. And you usually have a little, hopefully some green winged teal in there, which the baked duck is really good if it's with dressing.
Well, that's what made me so happy today. I mean, we killed a bunch of ducks the first 2 days, but it was just a frustrating hunt. But today, them three green winged teal came left or right, because that's the first green winged teal. We killed one single Sunday, but because I thought, okay, those are your eating ducks.
That's right.
For you non-duck hunters, that is the greatest eating duck
He's
out
good.
There.
Yeah. It's his diet.
We got the Thanksgiving ducks on the third day, Woody's and Teal.
Yep.
They're the best.
They're the best. And so when you do your dressing, you use the duck fat. I mean, you boil the duck. So is that duck stock is what you put into
duck
the dressing?
Okay. That's what makes it.
That's what makes it so good.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, duck, the fat on duck, most people don't know this. I mean, it's really the best part of the duck.
It's cornbread, onions, bell pepper, and
celery.
So
you cook the cornbread first and then just
have it ready and put in some, say, a rack of Ritz crackers and about two racks of saltine crackers. And you get all that crushed up. And then you have your veggies sauteed.
Which is what's the veggies?
Onions, bell pepper, and celery. All right, cook that down where they're done.
Louisiana Trinity.
Plus, it's a pretty good pile of it for that much dressing. You put that over in there. Then you cut it with duck broth, and you get it to where it's the right consistency, about one can of pet milk. Check it for salt. You salt the cornbread and all, but just check it for salt and black pepper a little bit, and you stir it around there. And then the ducks you boil to get the broth, the duck broth, you just take them, and I usually strategically place them like all the way around. It's a big pot like that, huge pot. I just go all the way around like three Woody's in the middle and circled by the wood for the teal.
I didn't realize the whole presentation. You have a whole way.
It's when you lift the lid, people, whoa.
I've seen it before. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
But Dad's is.
And this is not a dry dressing.
I was going to say, most people's dressing is dry dressing, which I don't care
this
much
is moist.
For. This is moist.
Not runny, but
right.
moist.
Exactly.
You
which just makes it good.
Runny's on it.
And I never ate it as a kid when Granny made it because, you know, it's got onions and it's got this. And now, I mean, it's so delicious. I'm like, you idiot.
It's good.
30 years you never ate this.
You girls, you just heard it. It's an easy recipe, but you do have to have ducks. Chicken's fine, but ducks are better.
Yeah, and some people use turkey for it, but ducks are far superior.
Ducks make the best dressing.
Let's take another break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0? my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee. Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
So, yeah, that's been our tradition, which has been really good. And then we did it that way so we could do our family on Wednesday and then other people's mm-hmm. family on. And, of course, it kind of started because I used to work for the church, and we wouldn't meet on that Wednesday night, so it was a better time for me.
But, you know, a lot of people have that same problem. You have kids, and then all of a sudden they're visiting their family and trying to deal with all that. And I can't imagine where families have trouble.
Yeah.
Getting together. So I say the number one rule is you got to have great food.
Yep.
I'm telling you, people are happier and they're more thankful.
That is true. Yep.
When you're eating well.
That's yep. exactly
Don't
right.
go buy some dry
crappy
turkey,
stuff.
You know, yeah, and say, well, I don't know why everybody's so upset. I know why. Because they're hungry.
Yeah. By the way, Al, I just noticed what you put there, you said, notice what happens when you can win a debate with ideas. And I've spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught at synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said. When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him on the face. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, "Is this the way you answer the high priest? Is this the way you answer the high priest?" He demanded. Well, it reminds me of when the guy came up and asked me about it was a homosexual behavior a sin, and I just quoted a verse,
First Corinthians,
that the Lord Jesus, being God in flesh, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, had written down. So I just quoted what was written. Way back 2,000 years ago.
But all the people who got offended didn't know that was a Bible verse.
I know that. But they came after me just like him.
Yep.
They said, what are you doing? I mean, that idiot, it's out there. And I thought, they don't know it's a Bible verse.
Yeah.
So after a couple of weeks, somebody finally said, he just quoted a Bible verse.
Right.
He said, where the list of sins, you know. Secular immoral, the idolaters, the adulterers, the male prostitutes, the homosexual offenders, and greedy, thieves, drunks, slanders, swindlers, that's about 10 of them. And it was all in the text. Well, I just quoted it, but I didn't say, look into your Bible, the 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9. I just quoted the verse when he asked me, did I think it was sin? I said, well, give him a verse that way. If they get mad.
It's not what you think, it's what the Bible says.
That way they won't get mad at me.
It was a good attempt. And your point, because I was sitting there when you quoted the verse, which is the beautiful part of what Jesus does and why he even went through this hour of darkness. It says, and that is what some of you were. But you were washed, you were sanctified,
I gave
you
them
were made holy in the name of Jesus.
Did you notice they conveniently left that out?
All right. I think that got purposely omitted from
the
article.
They left that part out.
Well, so here's it's a great thought you bring this up, because I think it's exactly what we're dealing with here between the Jewish leaders, between Pontius Pilate, Herod, all these other ones, and then the evil one, is they have to create a narrative. That man came down here with a narrative in his mind.
Yep.
He already knew what he was going to do. The questions were irrelevant. This is what happened here in this situation.
If I had known what he had just asked Jace, but Jace was sitting across the room a little bit,
right.
And I didn't know that the guy who unleashed this news media on me and everybody else, I didn't realize what he had just said to Jace. If I had known, I might have been a little more tactful. I just, but quoting the verse is pretty tactful. But anyway, he came to Jay, said, "Do you really expect us to believe that you had never had sex with your girlfriend before you married her?"
Yeah.
Jace, what was your reply?
I said, "I don't care if you believe it or not." He had heard that all. He got it off the internet, I guess. He had heard one of my speeches.
Yeah.
And I had made mention of that. And my point was not that I was bragging. I was just saying, I'm going to trust that God's way is the best way. That's what he said. And then I usually do a little deal about I'm having the greatest sex on earth. Disease-free, comparison-free, shame-free. I mean, there's a lot of pretty nice things about it.
So, so the point of the whole thing was, Duck Dynasty, whoo, man, millions of people are watching.
I didn't know, you know, nobody, that many would rally for me.
Nobody really knew much about us.
It was about selling magazines.
It was about, but it was also about his goal.
He had an agenda.
Was to take us down
in
a notch. You know, let me just tell you who these people really are. And you know why I know that's right? Because to this day, if you found the guy that wrote that and you went to his website, one of his taglines under his accomplishments is "the man who took Duck Dynasty down." I mean, that's what he has on his website.
Which it depends on what your definition of down.
Well, yeah, because we're still here. That, the funny thing about it was it didn't cancel us. I mean, maybe for some people it did, but I mean, I'd say we're still rocking
a line, which is what our culture does. That's why we're so divided. Everybody wants to pick a side, and there ain't but two. And so you kind of got the far right and the far left, and everybody make up all this stuff about, well, the 5% is what elects people. But, you know, we're just a divided country.
Right.
So if a lot of people, because when the show first came out, it blurred that line. People just watched it because it was funny.
They liked
it. In my opinion, it was funny.
They liked it.
But so the far left said, well, wait a minute here. We can't have our people watching those people. So dig some dirt up and let's
see. Somebody go do an expose.
All right. Oh, no, these people love Jesus. You know, I told y'all that story the other day. I mean, this is a bizarre story, but.
Hang on, before you tell that, let's take one last break.
I walk into a convenience store.
Yeah, this was bizarre.
It's 4:30 in the morning. I'm not thinking clearly, but I'm just saying. 4:30, you know. So I've got some duck blind. It's opening day of duck season. I'm excited, you know. I got some few knickknacks here at the store. There's nobody there. The hideous nature of this coronavirus thing, this guy behind the cash register is about 8 feet away from me. There's plexiglass. There's a thing. I'd never stopped at this store where you put your money
underneath
up underneath. And but, I mean, we're so far apart. I'm like, hey, you ready? He says what the money, whatever it is, 14, 15. So I take a 20 and a quarter, and I, like, kind of toss the money toward the tray because I'm thinking, they're big on social distancing here.
Yeah. You're not one to.
So, and I'm looking back, like getting, because I have a hole in my wallet. I drop coins everywhere. I need a new wallet. So, because I noticed there was a coin coming out. So I'm like, I toss the money, and he says, "Why you throw the money at me?" And he was like, real thick accent, not, you know, I'm sure he had.
Not from around here.
He's not Middle Eastern of some sort. And so I went, "Do what?" Because he said it kind of rudely.
Brusquely.
Yeah. I was like, "Why did you throw the money at me?" I was like, "Oh, no, I didn't throw it. We're so far away, I just kind of tossed it." And it didn't, as you see, it didn't get halfway there. I thought he was kind of kidding that it was a terrible toss. And he's like, he took the money and he said, "Here's what you do." And he slammed the money down and he shoved it toward me. I said, "This guy's upset. He's having a bad day." I said, "Well, look, it definitely wasn't anything personal. Because here's what I said. I love everybody because I love Jesus."
Uh-oh.
Well, 99% of the time when I say something like that, that diffuses things. Yeah. People say, oh, he didn't like that. It got worse. Now, you know, he's hot. I brought up Jesus.
You dropped Jesus on him.
And so.
Probably not a Jesus.
He's looking at me. He's like, "You should not throw money at me." I said, well, do you want the money or not? He went, no. I said, okay. I got the money. I left the stuff and I walked out. I will never be back here. I just thought it was the craziest thing, but I'm bringing that up because when I brought up Jesus, it just took a turn for the worse.
Yeah.
And then I realized, you know what? Probably doing things you shouldn't be doing. Mad at the world. I mean, literally, I'm telling you, I did nothing to invoke
this. Maybe a follower of Allah.
Probably.
Maybe. But when there's a narrative. That's why when you said that about narrative, I thought about that.
Yep.
I was like, in his mind, he thinks I think I'm better than him because I've been in America my whole life. And, oh, you're going to pull the Jesus card on me and you love me? No, I'm not going to let you love me. That's what I felt.
And he was willing for you to never come back. So, I mean, even just usually these guys are pretty, like, friendly because they want business, you know?
Yeah, I said I'm never coming back. He said, good.
And you tell me where it was. I'm never going there. I've never been in that
store. I was like, what's going on here? I'm trying to give you my money. And the toss was, you know, I thought it was kind of funny.
He took that as a insult. And look,
I want to be clear. There's plexiglass that I'm pretty sure I couldn't have shot a gun through. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not like
it
was anybody in danger from a quarter bouncing on the counter. I just thought it was a strange thing. But my go-to is when there's a confrontation, which this one shocked me because I didn't do anything, that I bring up Jesus because I thought, I'm going to let you know where I stand. And I said it's not personal. I was halfway apologizing, so it was not my intent.
Right.
I just didn't. I mean, we're a long way apart, buddy. That's kind of what I was doing. Ha ha. No ha ha.
Yeah, he had an issue.
Yeah.
Well, and that was my point about this whole thing. And to be honest with you, I've studied John many times. I've taught it. And I guess it's because of where we are now as a people and where we are in our country. But I never realized how political this amphitheater was around Jesus in this moment, because he was the only one that was telling the truth, and everybody else had a narrative. I mean, the Jewish leadership, they wanted to kill him because they wanted to shut him up. Remember, that was their...
You referred to old Pilate as hold on to power without being boxed in by truth.
Exactly.
Boy, you talk about a statement out of this day.
Isn't it sad, though, in our society as human beings that God knew the one thing he could count on was the hypocrisy of religious leaders political people to do what shouldn't be done?
And you put them together in this situation, and that's what they came up with. So the Pilate the whole time doesn't want to execute Jesus. He don't want to have anything to do with it. And what's funny is, I didn't bring it up in my sermon yesterday, but his wife had a dream during all this that's going on with him and Jesus. And she tells him, she said, don't have anything to do with that man because I've had a dream and I've suffered greatly because of it. Which I've always thought that was super weird, because I thought, where did that come from? Like,
I mean, I think
is that
God
from the Almighty?
Does communicate in dream. I mean, because you probably have had the same thing happen.
Yeah.
A lot of the sermons I've given, I woke up.
Yeah,
literally. It's like, where's the pen?
Think about it, Al. Look. Roman rule without uprisings. That's the way we got to roll here.
Because that was his job. Just
remain popular without extreme positions.
That's right.
Like this
stay in the middle.
Well, I'll be pragmatic without offending anyone.
Yep.
So you put all these together, hold on to power without being boxed in by the truth.
Yep.
Al, I got a question for you. What's changed?
Nothing. I mean, that's what I'm saying. When I looked at this and I saw Pilate's response to it, it's exactly what we see today.
Exactly.
Same thing.
These news channels, though, that you talk about that narrative. The truth is irrelevant.
That's right.
Whatever happens.
That's the last thing they want is the truth.
You spin it. I mean, Phil brought up the controversy with us. What I noticed is all the conservative outlets, well, they were all nice.
Mm-hmm.
They never asked, well, what exactly happened? Which would have been a good question. I wanted to tell it. There was one part, the Sean Hannity actually called me while I was duck hunting. I don't know how he got my number. And I don't know why I answered, to be honest. But
he tells that story.
He said, what happened? Now, that was a good question.
Yeah.
But none of the rest of them, they didn't ask what happened.
Because everybody had painted their own narrative. It didn't matter what happened.
You just
didn't matter.
No matter what happened. And I see the same thing with the president.
Oh, yeah.
that they just picked the side without getting the facts.
Right.
So in the old days, you know, they would just report the actual news, say, here's what happened. Those days are over.
They're gone.
Now they want to tell you why and why it shouldn't have happened. I mean, it's pretty sad.
Well, I did get the gospel preached to all of them before it was over, because every time they would stick a microphone in my face for 6 months, and they would say, would you give us an interview?
Dad did a press conference every Sunday in his Bible class.
I said, go right up the stairs right over there. I said, I'll be there in 5 minutes. You get the interview. They all would hustle the cameraman, and they'd all jam into the room, Al. And I said, I got them inside the within hearing range. So I would preach the gospel to them.
I remember it.
And it all finally ended up about 6 months later. One of them walked up there and said, will you give us an interview? I said, you just had it. 45 minutes. I said, do I seem like a hater to you? She said, not at all, Mr. Robinson.
But remember,
I said, put that on TV, would you? But it never made it.
But remember, look, we had like, I don't know, Good Morning America came to my house. And we did a live breakfast with the crew of Duck Dynasty. You know, we're on the show. I don't know if you were there or not.
I heard
it was me. It was you know, my family, and Miss Kay was there for some odd reason. And so as soon as they opened, and we're talking about live TV. Of course, it's not too long after that controversy. Whoever the newswoman is, I mean, it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're on. We're here, Jace, you know, the Duck Dynasty. And she looked over and she said, okay, would you love a gay baby? Now, that was the first question live, which it was awesome that she asked Kay that. Because, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, how do you know it's gay? I was thinking this in case.
You mean a happy
Kay
baby?
Kay said, of course, I love all babies.
I love it.
Because, I mean, Kay doesn't have a malicious bone in her body, you know. She's like, but I thought to myself, they probably had a meeting somewhere, and they're like, try to shake them up, ask them like,
some kind of question. Refer it back to the controversy.
You know, and I just thought to myself, this is coming from a narrative that totally destroyed whatever you were trying to accomplish with let's have a breakfast in here. Because I know a lot of people.
It's the same thing with
that.
What
kind of question is that?
It's the same thing we talked about before with what's his name used to be on NBC, the Matt Lauer. Remember, as soon as the first question was like, do you expect us to believe this show isn't scripted? I mean, you're like, is that where we're here to talk about that? Remember, it was just the same deal. It's like, but that's the narrative. The narrative is you're popular. We don't like your politics. We don't like where you're from.
We don't like your faith.
We don't like your faith, and so we're going to attack you.
This is what spawned what now is known as the cancel culture,
right,
which is their go-to.
We were one of the early ones in that whole thing.
People try to cancel you, which the people who are cancel me. Okay.
I have an upcoming...
Do you sit around and cry at night?
We were really kind of canceled anyway.
I have an
anyway.
Upcoming book expecting it within a few months about that very
about
issue,
this very
the
issue.
Canceled the culture. Canceled.
Dad's got a really interesting take.
The only thing I like, every time I hear that word cancel, I think of that verse in Colossians.
I don't know. You're diving into it.
I know, but I'm just saying.
You're writing the book, right?
It's because I preached that sermon about 3 times, and these people who keep trying to put us under some legal code,
that's right.
I'm like, what does canceled mean?
He canceled the written code.
But people say, but not really.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of time. Good stuff. Happy Black Friday.
May your aim always be true.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.